bigger than ever before. The Buckeye Cruise for Cancer in the Fans Euchre Tournament. Mark your calendars for May 5th at the Ballroom at Hollywood Casino Columbus for a tournament with high stakes for a low buy-in. Sign up your team of two for just $50 at 971thefan.com. Every team's guaranteed four games with the top 16 teams advancing to the money round. It all benefits the Ohio State Comprehensive Cancer Center, James Cancer Hospital, and Solov Research Institute. Limited space available. Sign up your team today at 971thefan.com.
First up on Columbus Perspective, joining me in the studio is Mr. David Royer. He is the CEO of the Adam H. Board of Franklin County, the Alcohol, Drug, and Mental Health Board. How are you?
Good morning. I'm Bill. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming in. We're going to talk about the opioid epidemic, which, of course, has been front and center in Ohio for a long time. But first, tell me about the Adam H. Board. What is it?
The Adam H. Board is actually a county office that's been in existence for 50 years. We're tasked with planning and providing funding and coordination for both mental health care as well as substance use disorder care. And when we say care, we mean not only just treatment, but also within the context of prevention and community education. We do that through an array of funds through both the state and federal government. But our largest source of revenue is our levy, the Adam H. Levy, which provides the bulk of the resources to support people with persistent mental illness as well as substance use disorders.
And that was overwhelmingly approved an increase just recently, right?
That's right. I think it was about 3 years ago that we went to the voters and asked for a renewal of our 2.2 mil levy, and it was renewed at, I believe, 72%, 73% approval, mm-hmm. Which is really a tremendous compliment about our community, about how we value people with disabilities and people with obviously significant challenges.
I was looking at your bio, and you've been the CEO since 2000 at Adam H., but you, even before that, for 10 years before that, were down in the Cincinnati area doing pretty much the same thing, right?
That's right. I've been very fortunate to have found a career that I love to do, and that is to assist folks that, through no cause of their own, have chronic illness and disease. The importance is that we have to take care of these folks. If you have a major mental illness such as schizophrenia, you're disadvantaged in so many ways. You're disadvantaged because of chronic health conditions. Most of the time, you're unfortunately on disability due to your mental illness. And then, of course, we know about substance use disorder and how all too often that disease. Fractures families and destroys lives. So being able to be a part of hopefully a constructive solution, creating constructive solutions to these kinds of challenges is worthwhile.
Over all those years, we've seen a lot of drugs come and go. I guess they never really completely go away, but it seems like I don't know if fad is the right word for it, but something is in vogue and then it disappears and then it's back.
Yeah, I think they're trends. Over the years I've seen, in doing what I do for a living, we had the crack epidemic. And of course, we've always had other forms. But the opioid crisis is probably the most severe and obviously the most deadly drug crisis that not only have we faced here in Central Ohio and Ohio, but out throughout the United States. I mean, just think about this for a second. About 130-some folks die every day in America from opiate overdoses. That's a staggering number. And when you think about 4,600 Ohioans dying every year, that's in 1 year, we lose more Ohioans than we lost in the World Trade Center in 9/11.
Wow. Now you've formed the Ohio Opioid Education Alliance.
Yeah. Some time ago, the mayor, Mayor Ginther, and the Board of County Commissioners asked Adam H. to create an action plan in response to the opiate crisis for Franklin County. They asked us at Adam H. to take the lead on that project, and we produced a plan. And one of the pillars around the plan was how do we better educate our community and how do we invest in preventing future opiate dependent individuals. And so as we looked at options, we began to have conversations with all sectors of our economy, the nonprofit sector, government, obviously the public sector, but also the corporate and philanthropic communities about, can we come together and can we begin to address in a longitudinal context a prevention and community education campaign that will hopefully slow down the rate of people becoming addicted to opioids. I think it's important to remember that I think, you know, 70% of the children that are now in foster care are because parents are opiate dependent. And in fact, the reality is most adolescents begin to misuse opioids because of the presence in the in their own homes and medicine cabinets. So as we went through this conversation, what we realized was that it was best if we all came together, every sector of our economy, to form this opioid alliance, education alliance. And, you know, it's really a coalition of business, education, civic, and government. And it's to educate and prevent Ohioans from misusing and abusing opioids. You know, our primary purpose is to promote and amplify that you can't live in denial, Ohio. And what do we mean by that? Well, denial is believing that it won't happen to you or a family member. And the reality is, in this case, opioid addiction can happen to anyone.
I think that probably many people listening have heard of these Denial Ohio ads where it puts a focus on simply that. Don't be in denial about what might happen to you or your family and what is happening around you.
You know, you're right. And one of the things that was interesting in the research, and we were afforded the opportunity to take our time in putting together this campaign. And one of the things about the research was that most people understood that there's an opiate crisis. I can't remember the exact number, but, you know, let's just say 70% of the folks said, yeah, we know there's an opioid crisis. But when you ask them, do you believe the opioid crisis would affect your family? Only about 20% of those individuals thought that it could happen to them. Interestingly, that was about the same rate as they believed that a family member may have an aviation accident.
Wow.
So that's how disconnected we are about our own reality versus the reality of the opioid. So when we did the research, we started to realize that we had to punch through what we thought was an important fact, is that most people don't believe it can happen to them. And so the campaign is designed around this research concept that says, actually, it can. And there are things you can do to try to minimize the risk for your family. And so the entire campaign has been around this fictional place called Denial, Ohio, a town just like every other little town or every neighborhood across Ohio.
Talking with David Royer, CEO of the Adam H. Board of Franklin County, you know, when you see the on the news where they'll do some stories about somebody who has gone through addiction, maybe still fighting it, you can see the shock in their own face that their lives have disintegrated to the point that they're stealing from a store, you know, just to subsist, because their life has gone from what may have started innocently from painkillers to this hell that they're involved in now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we hear things that, you know, on the surface seem unbelievable. Let me give you two examples. There was one just in the paper the other day where people will take in their dogs to a veterinarian in the hope, or their animals, in the hopes of that they can get the veterinarian to prescribe pain medicine for their pets in order for them to access pain medication. That almost seems unfathomable to you and I from a rational perspective, but that really does happen. The other thing that happens is when people have open houses, people will go visit open houses with the intent of going into the bathrooms to see whether or not there's any opioids in the medicine cabinets. In fact, you know, that gets to one of the pillars of our campaign, is that you really need to secure your opioids, if you have them in your house and you're actively needing those because of a prescription, that you need to secure them in a safe place. So when we hear these stories, for us, we think you got to be making that up. But unfortunately, no, these stories are true. And that's why we go back to this idea that we've got to stop the next generation of users.
It sounds like from the top part of it, the pill mills and pharmacies, that a lot of that has been taken care of now. Is that correct? Or is there still a lot of issues with that?
I think there will always be issues around that, though. I think with it, with the legislation that the Ohio legislature and the governor has signed, I think we now know that, you know, to acquire prescriptions, they're time-limited prescriptions. You have to go to the pharmacy. So I think we've made a lot of progress in that. It, you know, what I do hear sometimes is people that from people that have a family member that have legitimate needs for pain medicine, that they find it very aggravating. Mm-hmm. And what I try to encourage them to look at it is, yes, we have to recognize that sometimes this can be very inconvenient. But the alternative scenario is that we just had too many pills floating in too many places. I think the risk now is the diversion of what we call Suboxone. And Suboxone is a medication that we use actually to treat opioid dependence. And so, you know, I think it's always about chasing the next, situation. And I think the legislature's done a nice job in trying to address it from there. Unfortunately, and if you ever, if you really go back and look at the history of opioid use in America, you know, as a county board, we've been funding methadone for opiate addicts for probably 35, 40 years. And the reality is that we've always had opiate addiction, but it's mostly been in the form of heroin addiction. Mm-hmm. And so now what we saw was, as we shut down these pill mills and we created this legislation to make it more and more difficult to access the opioid pill supplies or fentanyl patches, is that the cartels came in and started with heroin. And now, of course, fentanyl, which is an extremely powerful narcotic, is very prevalent in the illegal markets. And in fact, I think when you look at some of the statistics, we almost have as many deaths from fentanyl overdose as we do from heroin overdose.
I've read stories, and I know some anecdotal stories just from in my own life, people that I know, who back in the hippie days of the 60s, when marijuana became big and LSD was, becoming an experimental drug for a lot of them, those people were afraid of heroin. They didn't take it. They might take LSD, but they were afraid of heroin.
Absolutely. And I'm of the age where I too remember those times. Mm-hmm. And that's been one of the things for me on a personal level that's been really hard for me to grasp. Why and how, the only thing that I've kind of in a personal context, I've come to the conclusion that it's a reflection sometimes of just hopelessness, not believing that there's any positive thing in their lives. There's no grounding. There's no touchstones. Call it whatever you want, but at the end of the day, when you're hopeless, a person without hope and belief that tomorrow can be better than today, I think they're more susceptible and more vulnerable, because that's a very, very painful emotional reality to live in. And so, this may be a little bit of romanticism on my part when I think back in those days. But there was, within a certain time period, there was hopefulness in the 60s about social change and social progress. Mm-hmm. This is now about, unfortunately, death and degradation. And it's one of the saddest things I've seen in my nearly 40 years of being in public mental health and substance use care.
Talking with David Royer, CEO of Adam H. Board of Franklin County. What are the tools that families need to cope with this and to prevent it from happening?
I think, you know, we really focused the Denial Ohio campaign around a couple, if you will, a couple pillars. And one was, and is talk to your children. There's a 50% positive outcome when parents take the time to talk to their children about opioids and this issue. If you need help on learning how to talk about the issue with your kids, you can go to our website at don'tliveindenial.org, which actually is a landing page where it can tell you, and it's an information reservoir of even how to talk about it with kids of different ages. So talking to your kids works. It's not always easy, but if you prep yourself, you can actually reduce your child's risk. Key factor. Second factor of the campaign, I think, is dispose of your medications. If you have old opioids that you're no longer using, clean them out, dispose of them properly. Actually, if you want, if somebody wants to do that, never flush them down the toilet. You don't want them in the water supply. But what we can do is if you go to adamfranklin.org, A-D-A-M-H Franklin, one word, .org, you can request a medication disposal bag, and we'll mail you one free, where you simply put the old opioids in the disposal bag with a half cup of warm water, seal it, shake it. It's a biodegradable. It renders all the old opioids inert, and it can be properly recycled into a landfill with just a small amount of biomass. So, you know, let's clean up the old opioids out of those medicine cabinets. Let's properly store them when we are using them under doctor's orders, and let's talk to our children. If you have questions about any of those things, or drop medications off when we have take-back days, there are some municipalities outside of police stations where you can actually take your medicines and dispose of them at those police stations. The way to find that direction, if you will, or that guidance is, again, to go to our website called don'tliveindenial.org. It's all one word, don'tliveindenial.org. And you can get the guidance and instructions on how to address some of these things. When you do that, you're making your family safer, you're making our community safer, and obviously we're making everything much healthier for all of us, because there's a tremendous social cost to opioid addiction. We sometimes forget that, you know, when someone overdoses from an opioid, we're incurring EMS calls. We're incurring naloxone to reverse it. We've opened up an opiate crisis stabilization center here in Franklin County. It's $8 million a year to operate this to try to help active addicts. So by doing these small things, we believe that we can reduce the risk over time, with the risk of having future addicts in our system.
What is the situation with the needed beds, not just in Franklin County, but statewide? When we're talking about 12 people a day that are dying.
Yeah. We've tried to address it here in Franklin County. And one of the things that when we were doing our research for the county strategy and for the city strategy, one of the things we heard from EMS and emergency rooms was that there was no place to take these individuals that had actively overdosed. So we built a center specifically to address that need. Unfortunately, from time to time, believe it or not, it's 55 beds and we're full. In addition to all the other kinds of drug treatment nonprofits that are out there in the community.
Mm-hmm.
One of the realities, I think, of addiction and as a general operating principle is that you have to try to engage the person at the moment of their vulnerability. And you have to, and so while drug treatment has never been on demand, I think the reality is that we have to expand more and more drug treatment as we go through this, because we know that the more we engage a person, and the longer we engage a person, the greater the chances are that they'll have a positive outcome. The other thing that I think has been helpful in this epidemic, and it's really almost a pandemic when you think about the amount of people dying, is that we now have medications that we can substitute and put them on, such as what I mentioned, Suboxone, buprenorphine, and we can transition them off of heroin or fentanyl. Remember that other social costs associated with active addiction like this can be hepatitis C, can be HIV. And so there are a lot of physical consequences to this addiction that drive up our health care costs.
What about empathy and compassion, among others? Social media, obviously, is a platform where people can say whatever they want and often say much more than they should. but we've also even seen some first responders who have even said, on rare occasion, we're spending too much money on Narcan. We're going out and we're saving these people's lives only to have them do it again, and it's using up all of our resources.
You know, it's an interesting reality, and to me, it's really more of a commentary on people's frustrations that, one, perhaps they really don't understand addiction. Maybe they've never had a person in their life that has been an addict, or a person that has a mental illness. But, you know, our basic belief is that if who am I to judge who should live or die?
Mm-hmm.
If I have to make a judgment, I want people to live, obviously. And I think one of the things about being a compassionate society is to understand that, unfortunately, not everyone may be built like you and I. I'm very blessed, but not everybody has that reality. So I think, you know, I understand the anger. I understand the frustration. But I don't, even in a moment of frustration for an EMS worker, perhaps, do they really want to just stand there and say, no, you've had your three doses?
Mm-hmm.
That's counter to what I believe is the fabric of our democracy, is that we care about one another.
Yeah, it's the old adage, there but for the grace of God go I. I mean, I don't know how else better it can be described. There seems to be no rhyme or reason. These people certainly are not choosing to live this sort of life. It's not what they want.
No, and I'm going to tell you something. It is an insidious process. It robs you of your, you know, it robs you of, you know, almost, it literally robs you of almost everything. Your spirituality, your physical health, your family. Perhaps you commit, you know, you can end up in jail, prison, you know, can as a consequence have other chronic health conditions, like I said, Hep C, HIV. It really is unfathomable for most of us, but that is the sad reality for some of us.
Talking with David Royer, CEO of the Adam H. Board of Franklin County. Anything else you'd like to add here before we wrap up?
No, I just want to thank you for taking the time to talk about this. It's an important subject. It's one that we have to continue to work on. You know, one of the things that's really important for folks, especially when you get frustrated about hearing about, you know, these kinds of subjects, is that we didn't get into this quickly. This was a long process for a lot of different reasons. We are making progress. We'll continue to make progress. But this is a problem that will be with us. But we're committed to working on it. And the whole Denial Ohio strategy is, again, a preventative longitudinal look at how do we decrease the risk that families and individuals don't have to end up in this really tragic reality.
And give us the websites again one more time.
Yeah. If you want more information, please go to don'tliveindenial.org. If you would like a medication disposal bag, please go to adamfranklin1word.org. And on our website, you'll find a place where you can put in your name and address, and we'll be glad to send you a disposal bag.
David Royer, again, CEO of the Adam H. Board of Franklin County. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.